The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And a good evening, everyone. Jake Asman here with Dan Butick right here on Sports Talk 1240 on AM 1240. WGBB. You can also get us on TuneIn Radio. We'll throw it open right here. The number to call to get involved is 631-888-8811. I'm with Dan Butick. I am once again Jake Asman. Dan, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. A lot to talk about. NBA Finals Game 2 going on right
now. In progress.
In progress as we come on the air right in the middle of the second quarter. And you know what? Game 1 obviously went to the Golden State Warriors, and it really seems like for the Cavaliers, if they could get this game somehow, I know they're down right now, if they could somehow get this game, taking one in Golden State before they go back to Cleveland, it would obviously be huge, but very tough if they go down 2-0.
No question. We'll keep you updated on that game as we continue throughout the hour. We're taking you until 10 o'clock. A lot to get to with the New York sports scene. Obviously, we will honor Muhammad Ali during this program as well. We, of course, were not alive to watch him fight, but his impact on sports and the sports culture and the world's culture in general is certainly worth touching on. But right now in the NBA Finals Game 2, as you were just talking about, Dan, the Warriors are up 42-33, 4:16 to go in the second half. Cleveland was up early in this one. The Warriors went on a bit of a run, and you mentioned it, huge game for Cleveland. They can somehow get away, find a way to get this win, go back 1-1 for Games 3 and 4 in your own building. You feel a lot better than being down 0-2, having to ask LeBron James and this Cavaliers team to now win two straight against the Warriors, because you figure Golden State's probably going to get one in Cleveland. So if that's the case, you got to make sure you win at least one game in Golden State.
Well, I agree, and that's why I think this is such a huge game for the Cavs. If they weren't able to take Game 1, which they obviously weren't able to do, to get Game 2, to take one of the first two games at Golden State, I know it's tough to win at Oracle, but we saw in the Western Conference Finals, the Thunder did it. So it is possible to do if they are able to just get one of these games, and obviously it's still early right now, 42-35. In the second quarter with 3:36 to go, Golden State leading the Cavaliers. Still a lot of time left in this game, but if Cleveland could somehow get this game, they feel in a lot better shape going back to Cleveland.
Let's get to the baseball now. The Mets and the Yankees were in action again today. The Yankees, they lost. The Mets, they lost. But we'll begin with the Yankees, and I have a personal story to this weekend because I was actually in Baltimore for last night's game. I was supposed to be there again today.
It was originally in doubt. You might not have been able to make this show.
Well, originally it could have been just Dan's voice
yeah.
You were going to hear. I ended up coming back today. If you haven't seen the weather outside in the New York metropolitan
just
area.
Just a miserable day.
Terrible
it's
day.
It's just been brutal.
And in Baltimore, it started up a little early. It was supposed to rain around 3 o'clock. And what happened was our thought process going into the day was, well, if we go to the game and there's a rain delay in the middle, that's going to be awful. We're going to want to leave. We're going to want to head back to New York. We're going to be stuck in enormous amounts of traffic. So we thought it would just be best to not take the chance and just go home. And to your point, Dan, I know you're going to say this. Thank God we went home. We were talking off the air. You look at what happened in this game. First off, the game started at 1:30. It wasn't a 1 o'clock start. So it was already starting at 1:30. Then what happened was the game was 3 hours and 25 minutes long before you even had the rain delay in the 8th inning. In a 1-0 game. It was this long already. So game goes into a rain delay. You come back after almost a 2-hour rain delay or hour and a half, whatever it ended up being, and the Yankees lose, and they lose
in heartbreaking fashion.
Chapman gives it up after there was runners on first and second with nobody out in the 8th inning. You go to Chapman. Girardi puts him in the game, and he doesn't have it after the rain delay. So it was just a miserable ending for the Yankees. After they got a big-time win yesterday, they held on after being up 7-0. It was great to be at that game, you know, in really good atmosphere. Camden Yards was beautiful. I'll tell you more about the trip in just a second. But, Dan, this is just a terrible loss. They lost on Friday because of the bullpen, and today Chapman and Dylan Betances, they didn't have it, and it cost the Yankees another game. So instead of really, the Yankees should have won all three games in the series. They end up losing 2 out of 3, and now the record stands at 26-30.
And let's look at it like this. The bullpen almost coughed up the game yesterday. The Yankees led 7-0 in the 6th inning. Next thing you know, it's 7-6. The Yankees scratched out another run and held on to win 8-6. But you're right. The bullpen easily almost cost them the entire series yesterday. You know, like I just said, almost cost the Yankees the game.
If Andrew Miller did not pitch a lockdown 7th and 8th inning yesterday, the Yankees would be in horrendous shape. They would have lost all three games. And the Saturday game, which I was at, they're up 7-0 in this game.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Ivan Nova, who's pitching so well in this game, gets into a bit of a struggle, gives up three runs in the seventh inning without allowing a single, without even getting a single out. So Girardi takes him out, goes to Nick Goody, and on Nick Goody's second pitch, first off, his first pitch with runners on first and second and nobody out was in the dirt, pass ball. Runners go to second and third. His second pitch was an absolute bomb by Adam Jones.
A blast. Really, just an absolute. It was gone. Way out of here.
The minute he hit it, you knew it was gone. I turned to one of my buddies, and I said, Adam Jones is going to – he kills the Yankees, and this would be so Yankee-like for them to blow this. Sure enough, next pitch, Adam Jones takes Nick Goody deep. And then thank God for Andrew Miller, who's been by far and away the best reliever out of the three guys in the back end of the Yankees' pennant, Betances and Chapman. So it was a big-time performance by Andrew Miller to get them that win, and Chapman came in and got the save once the Yankees added an insurance run. They won 8-6, and that was the only game I was at. But today was just terrible. They had 10 hits today, Dan, and they scored one run. The leaving runners in scoring position has killed this team all season. It looked like they were starting to put it together. They were hitting in that first game against the Orioles. They obviously hit yesterday in the Saturday game. And then even against Detroit a couple nights ago on Thursday, they started to string some runs together as well. But this Yankees offense is just so inconsistent, can never get a big hit. And you look at where this team is right now, and a week ago we were kind of saying the same things. A week ago they won 1-0 against Tampa, and they won remarkably because of a 2-1 against Tampa because of the Castro home run. Well, a week later,
that was their only hit in the ballgame.
A week later, what's really changed?
Well, nothing has changed, and this has been the Yankees' MO all season. We're 56 games into the season. They're 26-30. This is what they are. I think at this point, this is what the Yankees are. I just don't think they're a very good baseball team.
I think they're going to be hovering around .500 all season. And listen,
they're not a bad team, but they're an average team. They hit when they don't pitch. They pitch when they don't hit. And when everything looked like it was going together, the last couple days, the bullpen hasn't been there. And it's all characteristics of a sub-500 team. The injuries, a bug has bothered them. They haven't gotten any production out of Teixeira, but now he's on the DL. And let's be honest here. Rob Refschneider cannot be playing first base for you every day. He can't.
Well, at this point, they don't have a choice.
Well, the problem is you're not getting enough offensive. You're not going to get enough offensive production from him to play first base.
Here's the thing, Dan. I mean, there's no one out there. Mark Teixeira is a guy that hit 30-something home runs last year. He's got three this year. Now he's on the DL. And Mark Teixeira hasn't had a home run since the first week of the season. You have no one else. At least Refschneider has a chance to give you some doubles. He can hit you close to 300. He's being productive. He's not the issue. The real issues are guys like Brett Gardner, who's starting to hit. A-Rod's been inconsistent. He was on the DL. Now he's back. It's just his offense all season long, guys have not been able to be consistently healthy and hitting all at the same time. It's been too inconsistent from April to where we are right now, and it's a shame because other than this weekend, the bullpen for the Yankees has been really, really good. And you know what? Let's give some credit to the starting rotation. Even Michael Pineda, who we said he may not be in the rotation that much longer.
I mean, he gave the Yankees some length today.
When he started against the Tigers the other night, he had a really good start.
Against Detroit.
On Thursday, he pitched well, and he was the only one that in this rotation has not pitched well. So it's hard to get on the Yankees rotation and it's hard to get on the bullpen. It's been the offense. And we talked about it last week and not much has changed a week later.
And, not much has changed. And my point on Rob Refschneider is if Teixeira is out a long period of time, you're just not going to get enough offensive production in the long term. Enough power at first base from Rob Refschneider to be your everyday first baseman.
Well, you're not getting it at third base. You're not going to get it at positions where you should be getting it.
This has been their problem. And they've just been inconsistent. They haven't gotten the consistency. And let's be honest, they're four games under .500 here. We're not a few weeks into the season. We're almost 2.5 months into the season and they're under .500. I mean, the Yankees just, I think this is what they are. And it brings up the question as we get closer to July, as we get closer towards the trade deadline, will the Yankees part ways with Aroldis Chapman? Will they trade him to a team that can use a closer, that is a closer away from being a postseason team or a championship team, and get back probably some top-level prospects? Is that something the Yankees would look to explore to do? And I think at this point, if they continue on the trend they are, I think it's a no-brainer. You part ways with Aroldis Chapman, and you can get back a lot that will make this team better in the long run.
Well, you look at this team right now, and if it was the trade deadline right now, I agree with you. I think it's time to sell. But the problem is, we're not there yet. You sit here on a Sunday night, it's only June 5th. You know, a lot can change between now and July 31st when the MLB trade deadline is. So it's just too early to say. And I know a lot of Yankee fans on Twitter and Yankee fans you hear calling up the talk shows, they want to sell everyone, trade everyone. Well, I understand that thought process, but you just can't do that right now. You're not making moves in
June.
You're
not going to do it now.
I mean, the fact that James Shields even got traded the other day to the White Sox from the Padres, that was surprising because you don't usually see these type of deals taking place in June. You got to wait till mid-July, end of July, to really see any activity.
Jake in Connecticut. Jake, what's going on? You're on with Jake and Dan.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for giving us some time and giving us a call. What's going on?
Jake, I just want to first ask if you heard John Sterling just go off the air today and Susan Waltman take over the play-by-play duties.
What I was listening.
Going on there?
What was that all
what was
about?
Going on?
Well, I'll tell you, because I was in the car.
What was going on?
I was driving
Did
back
John
to
have
Baltimore.
To go to the bathroom?
I see. I put it out on Twitter. I wanted to know the Yankee fans' theories for what happened to Sterling. For those who weren't listening and for those who don't follow me on Twitter, at Jake Asman, what happened was all of a sudden we're driving back from Baltimore, supposed to be at the game. We put the game on in the car. Sterling is – everything's going fine, being John Sterling, doing his thing. He's calling the inning. Just all of a sudden, he gets up and he leaves, but he's not like, Susan, take over, I'll be right back. He just left. All of a sudden, in the middle of an at-bat, the Orioles were batting. CeCe was pitching. Susan Waltman's like, and the 2-1 from Sabathia. And I'm like – I turned to my friend who was driving in the car, and I go, what happened to John? So Sterling just dipped. He was gone for maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes. Then he just comes back, and he doesn't even say to the audience
he
listening –
probably had to go to the bathroom.
Where he was. But yeah. he didn't say where he was.
Well, you know what?
I just go, thanks, Susan. Thanks, Susan.
I was just – he just comes back in.
I'm
and
sure he had to go to the bathroom.
Susan, I thank you, and then kept going. Didn't say where he was. I was just very disappointed, though, as a Yankee fan, that the Yankees weren't hitting – and we couldn't get a Yankee home run. One of my Twitter followers tweeted at me, and I'll ask you guys, I'll ask you, Jake, from Connecticut on the line, do you think Waldman would have used one of John Sterling's catchphrases to describe the home run if a Yankee hit one?
Oh,
that
sure.
would have been incredible.
I'm sure he would have. I'm sure she would have.
Incredible. That would have been incredible.
She definitely would
have. It's an A-bomb from A-Rod.
Oh, I'm sure she would have. Jake, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
And you know what? Just before we move on to the Mets, one more thing about the Yankees. It's just... it's one of those things, you look at them and you look at the team they are, and we spoke about this before the season started. They're kind of in that transition. They're not rebuilding. They're sort of retooling. And I just think the bottom line is, you know, they put together such a great 7-8-9. And I give Brian Cashman a lot of credit. He made a very good trade. He bought very low on Aroldis Chapman. But he put together a great bullpen, and the problem is you don't win. You don't build a team from the bullpen out. There's no team that has ever won in the history of Major League Baseball that was built with a great bullpen and a mediocre rest of the team. And, you know, it's not gonna be the difference in you winning and losing games. It's only going to be the difference if you got a great rest of the team. The problem is the Yankees are pretty mediocre at 26-30. They have a great 7-8-9, but they don't get them the ball as much as they should.
No, and you know what's amazing, too? You look at where this team is, and it's very similar to the team that made the playoffs a year ago. And it just shows you how baseball could be year to year. But that Yankees team last year, I don't even think they were as good as this year's team. I guess they were because they were getting more production from A-Rod
well,
and Teixeira.
And,
but, I mean, it really is amazing when you look at this roster compared to last year's team, how drastically the records are to this point where this team was just a year ago.
But
when
a
they
lot
made the
of
playoffs.
It, and we said this before the season started, this season for the Yankees was going to be dictated on the offensive production from Alex Rodriguez and Mark Teixeira.
And A-Rod's been hurt.
A-Rod's been hurt. Now Teixeira's hurt, and he wasn't performing. I mean, those two guys gave you very, very good seasons last year.
Great seasons.
Excellent seasons. And that kind of covered a lot of the issues the Yankees had. They're not getting that production now from A-Rod. He's been hurt. He's just starting to get his legs back and starting to get back into the swing of things.
At least he's starting to hit.
Yeah, Gardner's exactly.
starting to hit. See, here's the thing,
but
though.
But Tex, you're not going to get the production. It doesn't look like Mark Teixeira, even when he does come back, is going to all of a sudden become an offensive juggernaut like he was last
no,
year.
No, and even despite all that, the thing is they're only 5 games out in the American League, 5 or 6 games. So I understand the thought process from the Yankee fans, and you can get involved in the program at 631-888-8811 if you want to weigh in on this. But I'll tell you right now, if you look at the Yankees and everyone wants them to sell, Major League Baseball as a whole isn't that good. You look at the top echelon teams, they're not that far off from some of the worst teams, especially in the American League, East especially. I mean, look at the division. Boston can hit, they can't really pitch. Tampa, very inconsistent, same boat as the Yankees. The Jays are starting to get going, but they got off to a rough start. You look at the AL East, and no team to this point has really stood out and differentiated themselves from the rest of the pack. So as bad as the Yankees have been, it's agonizing because you know they're still right there. Some of these things that went right last year start going right this year.
No, you're right, but the problem is that we're now, you know, over 2 months into the season, and they're six games back, which is not terrible. They're still in the thick of things, but they're four games under 500, and they haven't been over 500, and that's the issue.
Well, they got the 22-22, and then they regressed.
Well, that's the thing. They got back to 500, and then they're under 500.
Well, that's the problem when you start your season eight games under 500.
No, you're right, but this is just the team they are. They're a sub-500 team, and I know they're right in the thick of things in the AL East, but the question is, they got to get back to 500 first, and until they get back to 500,
so I've been saying the
it's
whole time.
Hard to take them seriously as a contender, because let's be honest, no matter how many games they are back, no matter how little, they're going to have to be over 500 to do anything as far as a postseason.
I mean, they could tread water all year, but you're right. Unless they get over 500 at some point before July 31st, something needs to be done. Either you sell or you make a move. The idea that you could stand still all season would be pointless.
Well, it's not standing still, and if the Yankees want to make a move, I understand their thought process. But the Yankees have made it very clear they don't want to part with any of their prospects. Then you're not really going to get anyone. You're not going to get anyone on the team.
Like Justin Ackley, who they got last year.
And he stinks.
Well, someone of that ilk.
But he's not going to make the Yankees that much better if they bring someone
in
like that.
And people have asked, a lot of my friends or people have tweeted at me, well, do you think the Yankees can make a move? And to me, the Yankees never viewed this season as championship or bust. So, no, I don't think they'll make a move. They'll be happy if they get better and go to the playoffs, and maybe they could do something for a low-risk kind of guy at the deadline like they normally do. But right now, you said it, this team is 26-30. They're four games under 500. They're no longer in a position where we could sit back and say, hey, here's a team that's contending. They got to get back to 500, and if they don't and this continues, you got to be sellers. You can't just stand by the old Yankee mantra of, we're the Yankees, we don't sell, we compete. The only way you're going to completely do a full-on turnaround is if you get some younger guys in here, you get some prospects back, and if you really like Aroldis Chapman that much, you can sign him as a free agent if you really want him, and I don't think the Yankees will go in that direction. So right now, this team is what it is, and either the guys on the roster start turning it around, or they're not going to make the playoffs, and they should be sellers
in July. The reason why I would say, at this point, obviously, but if they continue to tread the way they've been, you know, at the mark they've been going, it looks like they will make a move. My thing with Aroldis Chapman, before we move on to the Mets, they acquired Aroldis Chapman. They already had Betances and Miller. If they did not have Aroldis Chapman and only had Betances and Miller, what do you think their record would be right now?
It'd probably be pretty similar. Maybe a couple games
that's
worse.
That's the thing. That's
well, you
got
to remember, though, they did start playing, in fairness to Chapman, they did start playing a lot better once he got back.
No,
he was suspended for the first 30 games.
I agree with you, but my point is that when you have such a great unit at the back end of the bullpen, it's really a wash when you're starting pitching, for the most part, up until recently, has been very mediocre, and you're not hitting consistently.
Well, it's really been the hitting. The hitting's been a huge issue. I think anyone that looked at this Yankees team, we all thought their biggest issue would be the rotation, and it really hasn't been. They got off to the bad start when Severino and Pineda
were in
there.
The last 3 weeks it has settled in.
CeCe's been one of the best pitchers in baseball in the month of May and now into June.
No, absolutely. The last three and a half weeks, the Yankees starting pitching has really come into the thick of things. And I think that's a big reason why. But you mentioned it, the offense, and they're not getting consistent offensive production from guys they need to. And until Headley starts hitting consistently, I know he's starting to come around a little bit. Gardner's starting to come around a little bit. They need A-Rod to really carry the bulk of this lineup. And the two boppers in this lineup are Alex Rodriguez, who's how old? 40? 41? And Carlos Beltran, and Beltran's been a godsend for the Yankees this year.
He's been great.
But how long is he going to keep it up?
Well, that's the thing. He's getting older, too. So the Yankees have some real issues, and we'll say the same thing we said last week. Until they get back to 500, as you were
saying,
it means nothing. But in the AL East, they'll be in it for a while. Will they be in it come trade deadline? That's when things get really interesting. But once again, the number to call, 631-888-8811. Jamarcus is in Bayville. Jamarcus, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, Jamarcus?
Hey, I just want to talk about the possibility of the Yankees being sellers at the trade deadline.
Go for it.
You have a trade suggestion, or what's on your mind?
Do we think?
No, I was just curious if you guys think you know, maybe they trade a reliever like Miller and Aroldis Chapman.
I'll tell you what.
We were just talking about that, and I think it's a, if they continue, like we just said, Jamarcus, and we thank you for the call, if they continue to tread on the angle and the trajectory that they're looking, you have to think that they would part, and it looks like it would make the most sense to trade Chapman. He's a free agent at the end of the year, and let's be real here. He is going to be the most coveted player at the trade deadline.
No question, because he's not. His contract's not guaranteed after the season, and he's not making a whole lot of money for a
and
guy.
He throws 100 miles an hour.
Well, he's unbelievable. Imagine what he could do for a pennant team that's
competing
for the playoffs.
And don't think that every team that's in contention, a team that needs a closer, that maybe will have an injury down the line.
You know what team would make a lot of sense for? The team we're about to talk about, the Mets. If they can get him. Another guy with Addison Reed and Familiar, that would make the Mets, with their pitching, it would put a lot of makeup over their offense that struggled and had a lot of injuries. It'd be huge for them. And I just want to make one more point before we get to the Mets, as I just said. Jamarcus said Andrew Miller or a reliever. If they're going to trade anyone out of those guys, the Chapmans, Miller, and Betances, it's going to be Chapman. I don't think they'll trade Andrew Miller. Or Betances. They're under contract.
Agreed.
They're not getting paid a whole lot. And you look at Chapman, he's going to be a free agent. If anyone's getting dealt on the Yankees from the bullpen, it's going to be Aroldis Chapman.
No, I agree. I think Chapman, it just makes the most sense with the way his contract is. Free agent at the end of the year. It makes the most sense. And the Yankees will be able to get a lot if they decide to deal him. And you mentioned about the Mets as we switch over to the Mets. They took 2 out of 3 from the Marlins this weekend. They're 2 games back of the Nationals. Lost today, 1-0. But, you know, they went against Jose Fernandez. But the bright spot in today's game, Matt Harvey, 7 innings, an earned run, 4 hits, struck out 3. And in his last 14 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 6 hits, and 9 strikeouts. So it seems like after 3 or 4 really rough starts for Matt, the last 2 outings, he's been beautiful. And it seems like he's getting back on track.
And I'll tell you what, when you look at the Mets, and last week I was sat in the same seat and I was on the airwaves right here on WGBB, and I said, the Mets, if Matt Harvey bombs, they got to take him out of the rotation. And I thought after his last start against the Nationals, they should have maybe skipped him or put him on the DL, let him get his head straight. To the Mets' credit, they did not do that. They let him pitch his way out of it. And that's why the Mets are paid to make those kind of decisions. Because at the end of the day, they know their guys. They obviously saw something in Matt's mechanics. The pitching coach, Dan Worthen, worked with him. And since that start, on Memorial Day, a game you were in attendance with, I believe, with your father.
Yep, and he was excellent.
And the Mets won. I think it was a 1-0 game over the White Sox,
1-0 game over the White Sox.
And it was a terrific game for the Mets. It turned Matt Harvey's season around. And even though they lost 1-0 today, they did take 2 out of 3. I think this is the best you could feel about a 1-0 loss out there.
I agree.
Just because it's Matt Harvey, and you needed him to pitch well. Because it's one thing for him to pitch well on Memorial Day against the White Sox. That's only one start. For him to prove it again against the Marlins, that's even bigger for him in his confidence.
And I didn't think they were going to win today coming into it. I mean, Jose Fernandez's numbers at home are ridiculous. He's been on such
a 14 strikeouts?
He had struck out 14. He's 23-1 in his career at Marlins Park.
That's unbelievable.
He's outstanding. I did not think the Mets were going to win today. That's why I thought it was so huge for them to take 2 out of 3 and win the first 2 games of the series. I did not see them putting a lot of offense together today, especially with no Lagares in there with the thumb injury. Cespedes was out again with a sore hip, even though he pinched hit in the 7th inning. He did not play today, get the start, only appeared as a pinch hitter and popped out to right field. But, you know, I agree with you. It's probably the best feel you will get in a 1-0 game, because I'm sure the Mets had a lot of concern about Matt Harvey going back out there.
And as you were saying, you lost to Jose Fernandez. The
exactly.
guy does it to everyone.
Exactly. The guy has been so good. And to the Mets' credit, I know, you know, they've lost a couple of tough games in the last week. One was to Clayton Kershaw, and this one's to Jose Fernandez. I think the Mets' issue is just being able to put together consistent offense with the injuries they've had at first, obviously at third with Wright, at catcher with Darnell, even though they're hoping to get Darnell back in the next couple of weeks. He started his rehab assignment today down in Port St. Lucie. For the Mets, it's about, you know, just staying where they are, because they're in a great spot right now, 31-24. They lead the wild card, 2 games behind the Nationals. Was 1 game before going into today. Obviously, Nationals won 10-9 against Cincinnati, so that set the Mets to 2 games back. But if the Mets can just hang in there where they are, and then when they get some bodies back, I think they'll be in good shape. And I will say, Sandy Alderson made an excellent move last week in getting James Loney. He made his impact in this series, had another hit today.
I wanted the Yankees to get James Loney.
It would have made perfect sense, and I said last week, it would have made perfect sense for the Mets or Yankees to get James Loney. The Mets went out there, made the move, and that's a move in previous years the Mets would have never made.
And in his first game, he hits a home run, helps the Mets win that game against the Marlins. I think that was on Friday night. I mean, you look at James Loney, I mean, he's not the same player he once was, the guy's a proven veteran, and he was, you know, sitting at AAA, available for any team to make the right deal and come get him. The Mets didn't give up anything to get him, but what, cash considerations?
Well, it's actually very funny. I thought this was such a funny situation, is everyone thought, oh, you're going to have to give up something for the Padres. He actually had an opt in his contract where on June 8th, he could have opted out of his contract and signed with whatever team he wanted. He had an opt-out on June 8th in his contract, so the Padres had no leverage. The Mets didn't have to give up anything to get him.
They could have just waited.
They could have just waited, but they wanted to get him earlier, so they threw cash at the Padres. They threw cash at the Padres to get him, which I thought was pretty funny, because 2 weeks ago, we didn't hear anything about the clause in his contract to opt out. All we heard was, well, it's going to take maybe a decent prospect to get him because he's hitting .340 in AAA for San Diego.
Which means nothing,
let's
be honest.
Which means nothing. The Mets got him for cash, and really, he's a good defender. He's a good left-handed bat. He hits for contact.
He's also a very likable guy. Everyone
yeah, absolutely.
In the clubhouse will like him.
Oh, yeah.
Anything you hear about James Loney from guys that played the sport or guys that were teammates of him, it's all positive. It's a good move for the Mets because, let's be honest, when you lose a guy like Lucas Duda and now you lose David Wright, say whatever you want about David Wright and Lucas Duda, the one thing they do well is when they're on, they hit home runs. Even David Wright with his bad back and now the herniated disc in his neck, he's been able to get into some balls this year and have some power despite the fact that his batting average is low. James Loney, maybe he's not going to hit you a lot of home runs, but at least he's going to get you on base and be productive.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what the Mets need most of all right now. Forget about the home runs. They're going to hit home runs, as we've seen. They're going to hit a lot of home runs. It's about getting on base and setting
the
table.
The Mets are very similar to what the Yankees have been the past couple of years, where it's home run or bust, live and die by the home run ball.
Which has been basically the mantra for them this season, but in the last week we have seen they have been able to score some runs. Since they've gotten Loney in the lineup, honestly, over the last week, they have been able to get some hits with runners in scoring position. I don't know if it has any impact bringing Loney into the lineup and slotting him fifth or sixth, but since James Loney has been in the Mets lineup, they have hit a lot better with runners in scoring position, and even yesterday, you saw in late in the game, they pinch hit Matt Reynolds for Juan Lagares. RBI single ties the game or gives the Mets the lead. So I think just for the Mets, it's about staying where they are and trying to hold in there until you get some bodies back or maybe you make a move for someone if it's a Jonathan Lucroy behind the plate, if Travis d'Arnaud isn't able to come back, or you make a move for a third baseman if you feel Wilmer Flores can't hold the duties day to day. The Mets have a lot of questions that need to be answered over the next 3, 4, 5 weeks. But right now at 31-24, two games back, it's hard to really panic if you're a Met fan.
No, because a lot of things have gone wrong. You've had a lot of injuries, and all the talk has been about how great the Nationals are. Well, you look at the standings, and the Mets are only two games back.
Well, that's the way I look at it. And everyone's like, well, Washington is so good. And Washington is very good, but the Mets have been without Wright in the last 2 weeks. They've been without Duda, and they've been without d'Arnaud since April.
And arguably their best pitcher on their inner rotation has not been good at all outside of his last two starts.
And they're only two games out of first place, so there is a lot of silver lining with the Mets right now, even though they have lost a couple of tough games in the last couple of weeks, and Conforto hasn't hit in the last 5 weeks.
After he was off to as ridiculous of a start as you could be off to.
You know, he had a couple of hits the last couple of days, so maybe he's turning the corner. Who knows? We'll see. But, you know, I see, you know, I hear a lot of talk radio, a lot of people on Twitter. The Mets need to make a move. It's time to panic city, and everyone's saying it's not. It's not the case. They're 31-24 and two games out of first place, and they lead the wild card right now. So it's hard to really panic if you're a Mets fan. They just have to keep doing what they're doing, scratch out some tough wins like they had the last couple of days against the Marlins, and you hope for the best.
Well, it's just all about the narratives, isn't it? Because in Washington, it's, oh, they're in first place. The Nats are this unbelievable powerhouse. And give them credit. After what they went through last year, they've really turned it around.
Absolutely.
They're going to be in it throughout the course of the season.
Without a doubt.
Strasburg, since last June, has arguably been, him and Clayton Kershaw, the best two pitchers in baseball. And, of course, Jake Arrieta as well. So you add him into that mix, those top three guys right there. But right now, you look at this Mets team, and we just outlined all the issues they have. Will they make a move at the trade deadline? And I think to win the division, they should look into maybe a catching option, maybe call up the Yankees for Aroldis Chapman or see if any other top reliever is available. But as you said, Dan, it's really hard to be that negative about the Mets. Two games out of first place, and a lot of things have gone wrong. And listen, you knew there were going to be some bumps along the way, but you didn't expect Matt Harvey to not be Matt Harvey until the last week and a half. So you look at this Mets team right now, and hey, the pitching is what it is. You know it's going to be there all season long if guys stay healthy. I think at the end of the day, you look at this Mets team, and I don't think much has changed. I still think they're better than the Nationals when it comes down to it. We'll see what happens, what the teams do at the trading deadlines. But right now, you look at this Mets team, as you were saying, plenty of things to like, as well as some things, hey, they need to work on, but let's not panic.
I agree. No need to panic. No need at all.
And finally, before we wrap things up here with the first half hour of the show, let's get to a quick NBA Finals update. We're headed to the third quarter at the half. Golden State 52, Cleveland 44. So Cleveland better have a huge second half. They better come back in this one, or they are indeed in danger of being down 0-2.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more sports and more of your calls here on Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now back to the show.
Back here in the studios at 1240 WGBB, Jake Asman here with Dan Budick. Right here on Sports Talk 1240, we just talked a lot of baseball in the first 30 minutes of the program. We opened with the Yankees. We talked about the Mets. Just a reminder, if you missed any of the show, you can get it podcasted the next day. Follow us on Twitter at Jake Asman and at Dan Budick. We'll tweet it out. It will also be available at Sports Talk 1240. That's the Twitter handle for the official show account. And the phone number to get involved with the program is 631-888-8811. Dan, I got a quick story for you before we talk about the Knicks' new head coach, Jeff Hornacek. I was waiting to tell this. I haven't told you the full story yet when we were off the air. So I'm driving back today, and it kind of plays into the Knicks a little bit. This guy did play for the Knicks for a very brief tenure. Driving back from Baltimore earlier today, trying to beat the rain as we talked about the open. Didn't end up sitting through a mess of a Yankee ending. And we stop at a rest stop in New Jersey. And we walk in, and I turn to my left, and I see a very tall guy wearing just a button-down shirt, normal button-down shirt. But he's not just any guy. Big, tall guy, 6'10". I turn to my friend. I go, that guy looks like he played in the NBA. Is he somebody? Is he an athlete? I look at my phone. Did a quick glance. I'm trying to see who this guy is. I'm like, I think that's Samuel Dallenbear. And obviously, Samuel Dallenbear played with the Sixers for many years. I think he was on the Kings.
One of a terrible trade that sent him to the Knicks.
He was in the Dallas Mavericks. And here's where the Knicks get involved. He played his final year in the NBA with the Knicks. So I recognized him from the Knicks. And I knew who he was, obviously. He's played in the NBA for a very long time. But I just remembered him with the Knicks. So I see this guy, and I'm like, well, I mean, I got to ask if it's Samuel Dallenbear. And then he turned around, and I recognized it was 100% Samuel Dallenbear. So I went up to him, and I asked Samuel Dallenbear for a photo, and we talked about his Knicks days very briefly. He said he loved living in New York. He's now playing overseas in China, and he said he likes it as well. But if you remember how it all started for Phil Jackson in New York, one of his first moves was trading Tyson Chandler, getting back the star of the triangle offense,
yeah, right.
Jose Calderon, and Samuel Dallenbear was in that deal as
right.
well. And he's obviously a local person. He went to Seton Hall. I think he lives in the New Jersey area from what he
ended
told
up being
me.
A terrible trade for the Knicks.
And it was an awful move for the Knicks, but he was a nice guy. I'll give him credit. He was a nice guy. We took a photo, and it was cool to reminisce about his 1 year in New York. And as you made the joke earlier in text message, I did not thank him for the Knicks 17-win campaign that he was a part of.
He was a part of it. He had a lot to do in Fish's first campaign, first and only full campaign as Knicks head coach. And skipping over to the Knicks, that's a great story. Knicks obviously announced Friday Jeff Hornacek, their new head coach. And before we talk about Hornacek,
he's a great name. You know the media was going to love
him. I'm watching the thoughts, I'm watching the press conference. Phil opens up with his, you know,
I know where you're going.
You know,
with
his thing, and then Steve Mills comes.
Here we
up,
go.
And I'm watching this, and I'm and Steve starts talking, and the first thing he says is, "Why wasn't in the preliminary interview with Jeff?" Phil told me he thought he'd be a great candidate, and I was Skyped in. Why are the Knicks paying Steve Mills? This is what a waste. Like, and honestly, if that's true,
you know he's the GM, right? That's his title.
But why is Steve Mills saying that? That he wasn't in the preliminary interview, that him and Phil met for 2 hours, and that's when Phil thought he'd be a good part of the head coach, but the general manager, quote-unquote, of the team, didn't really get a say in that and was Skyped in on a conference.
I'll tell you what's a great job. General manager of the Knicks.
It's the easiest job in all of sports.
You have a head coaching vacancy, and you're not involved.
You're not involved. Phil obviously gets the selection, and Phil got the last selection, and we all know how great that turned out with Derek Fisher. But I just thought it was funny that not only if that is the truth, but that Steve Mills...
Well, this is really his third selection. He wanted Steve Kerr, and he's coaching game two of the NBA
true.
Finals.
That's
right
true.
Now.
He did want Steve Kerr. And then Steve Mills comes up there and admits to the fact and just really...
I love how angry this makes you.
But it's just so it's so ridiculous and just really kind of like explains what and really solidifies what the rest of the New York media and really the rest of the NBA basketball world
knows. It's
Phil's
world. It's his show.
But then why pay Steve Mills to be the general manager?
I don't have an answer for you. I have seen people try to make the argument that he has close ties with players' agents and it can help at the negotiating table. Well, did LaMarcus Aldridge become a Knick last year? Or Greg Monroe? He left to go to the Pistons. I mean, what does that really mean? I get what you're saying, 100%.
I just think it's ridiculous.
It's a great job. You should apply.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Be his assistant.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, that might be Allen Houston, but maybe be his assistant.
I mean, it just seems like...
Maybe you could pick the D-League mascot.
It just seems like the fact that Steve Mills is the general manager by title... And he didn't even get a real say in the head coach. It was Phil Jackson that just said to Steve Mills, I think we should go with this guy. And then Steve Mills was Skyped into a conversation. And then they flew Jeff out to New York and Steve, I don't know, took him out to dinner or something. But I just think it's so ridiculous, the Knicks front office. And I just think it adds to the just ridiculousness and craziness that is the New York Knickerbockers.
Well, I mean, it's Phil Jackson's show, and we'll get into the Hornets at Kyra right now, but quick finals update. Game 2 going on, as we just said. 9:16 to go in the third quarter, and Golden State's up 56-46, so they're having a nice lead in that one. And you look at what's going on with the Knicks, though, getting back to the whole Hornets at higher. And this kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, when it first came out, I think it was, what, a week and a half ago when the news first came out that the Knicks were going to hire Hornacek?
Well, it all had to do with the fact that Jeff Hornacek's daughter graduated from USC the same time that Phil was out there.
Well, it's coincidental, of course.
It's all just coincidental.
Well, what was funny is that the media, the New York media, made it seem like Phil Jackson wasn't even conducting a coaching search, that it was going to be Kurt Rambis this whole time, and then he interviewed David Blatt just because he was Steve Mills' high school teammate, and we just threw him in there because it all just makes sense.
Well, Mills doesn't get a say, so I don't think that really matters at this point.
At this point, you know Blatt didn't have a chance because Steve Mills didn't even get a say in the Hornacek hire, as you were just talking about. But I will say, I can respect the hire from the standpoint.
Well, I'm not trashing the hire. I think it's a good hire.
Well, we'll look at from this standpoint. It's not just a triangle guy. It wasn't like, oh, we got to hire
and
Kurt
it's not
Rambis
a Phil guy
because we had to hire the triangle. Phil went out of his circle here. He hired a guy that he thinks could be a good head coach. And listen, Steve Kerr wasn't necessarily a triangle guy. I understand that Phil Jackson coached him, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Steve Kerr was going to run the triangle. He wanted Derek Fisher because he was a novice coach. And I know Steve Kerr would have been a novice coach, but Steve Kerr has GM experience. He played in the league. It's a little bit different. But I can respect Phil Jackson for going a little bit out of his roots, hiring a guy that he thinks is the best fit for the job. Will it work? Well, the bottom line is, like all coaches in the NBA, it won't work if you don't have talent. But at least Hornacek has shown you in Phoenix he's able to win. He's able to win with talent that a lot of people didn't think was going to be any good. His first year in Phoenix, I think they doubled their win projection
total. Doubled their win total, yeah.
And he was second in Coach of the Year voting, and I think they won 48 games that year. It ended bad in Phoenix because new management came in. A lot of players were unhappy. You had different contract issues. They traded Goran Dragic. I mean, the list goes on and what went down there. But you hope a guy who has head coaching experience now, a guy that doesn't necessarily have to just run the triangle offense because Phil Jackson wants him to run it, maybe it could work. But once again, I like the hire, as you were just saying. But at the end of the day, Phil Jackson, get some talent in here, and then we could really evaluate what type of coach Jeff Hornacek will be.
Well, 100% agreed, and there's a long way to go. As you look at the Knicks roster, as the way it's currently constructed here on June 5th, It's just not very good. They need to add talent to this roster. They need to make some moves in the offseason to put players around Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis. As we've seen, Kristaps have an excellent rookie year, second in rookie of the year voting. Looks like he's going to be an excellent player in this league.
And Hornacek even said that, why can't he be the best player in the NBA?
Well, you're right.
I mean, if he can be the best player in the NBA, you got to be the coach to get him there.
And another thing along with that is it goes back to the fact you got to put some talent around him too, him and Carmelo. And then I think you can say, oh, maybe the Knicks could be a playoff team. But until I see Phil add some good talent on this team and have a formidable roster that could go out there night in and night out, included with a point guard, absolutely, then I will say that, like you just said, the Knicks are, or that we're ready to see how good of a coach Jeff Hornacek is. If Jeff Hornacek's coaching a very similar team to the team that finished the season last year with Hall of Fame coach Kurt Rambis, they're probably not going to win that many more, if not the same amount of ball games.
Well, you look at the Knicks, and they have $19 million to spend in salary cap, and every team's got money. So the idea that, oh, the Knicks have money, they're going to get someone.
Every team has money. The question is, are the Knicks going to be able, is Phil with his 11 rings on the table going to be able to get any free agents? Because for the last 2 years, we've been saying, well, Phil can convince anyone to play for the Knicks because he's got shiny rings. It hasn't been the case at all.
No, that's why Steve Mills is the GM. He's got to talk to the he's got to talk to the agents.
So, and the whole thing, it's so ridiculous. And, you know, and the thing, it will fill
Zen. Don't you love when Knicks fans? Listen, I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a very big Knicks fan. But I'm a realist, all right? This team has not been good the past couple
the
years.
Rings.
And a lot of Knicks fans on Twitter especially they hate the New York media so much that anything that they report that could be viewed as somewhat negative towards the Knicks is awful. And these guys that are just Phil Jackson lovers, if you will.
Oh, he's got this cult following.
He's got the Zen. Let Phil be Phil. And I'm all about
Phil. What does that mean?
Phil has never been an executive, and I'm all about him hiring Hornacek. I like the hire. Don't get me wrong. But let's be honest here, Knicks fans. If the move was to hire a guy that doesn't necessarily have to have ties to Phil Jackson, then the best coach available was Tom Thibodeau, and they let him go to Minnesota. So let's calm down with the whole triangle this, and Phil Jackson knows what he's doing. He might know what he's doing, and I'm willing to let him ride it out. He hired Hornacek, we got to see what happens, but let's not act like Phil Jackson hasn't had some bad moves and that the media is just out to get him. That's how some Knicks fans make it seem.
Well, I agree, and let's call it for what it is. He has made more bad moves as Knicks executive than good moves.
Absolutely.
I mean, some of the good moves, I mean, drafting Kristaps Porzingis
is a great move.
Excellent move.
Great move. He deserves all the credit for that. You can't discredit the Porzingis
absolutely.
Pick.
Absolutely. But he's also made a lot of bad moves. We mentioned Samuel Dowling in that trade, the Tyson Chandler trade. That was not a good trade.
J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert for nothing.
They got nothing back, and look at they're both playing in the NBA Finals.
Man,
for the second straight year.
And a quick finals update, as you said it, Golden State really starting to pull away, 67-53. But you're absolutely right about this Knicks team. Phil has made some questionable moves. The Porzingis move, clearly a great hire, and I understand what they were doing. They stripped this roster down. But at the end of the day, you need talent on this team, and this team does not have a true point guard. I don't want to hear that Tony Roten, who's been injury plagued, didn't play at all last year.
They need a legit NBA point guard.
He's going to magically come in off this contract they signed him to last year to be ready for opening night, whatever
that
means.
They need a legitimate NBA point guard.
And if it means
the Knicks have been craving that.
And if it means spending max money on a guy like Mike Conley or spending a lot of money on a guy like Rajon Rondo, they need someone of that ilk. They need someone that could play the point guard position, especially in Hornacek's offense, because if you look at what he did in Phoenix, he had guys like Isaiah Thomas. He had Goran Dragic. He had very good point guards out there to run his style of play. And if you want that with the Knicks, with Carmelo Anthony, and with Kristaps Porzingis, you need to get someone that can get them the ball, that can create spacing on the floor for them to operate.
And seriously, and as far as point guard is concerned, they have to get a formidable NBA point guard, and whether it's Mike Conley, and you mentioned
even
it.
Even Jeff Teague would
Jeff
be nice.
Jeff Teague, if they have to throw max money at Mike Conley, I would. I would.
Well, the first step is getting back to the playoffs, and then you build off that. Then guys will want to come to New York if you have a base
established.
You're
absolutely right. If they can get a guy like – I mean, think about how much better the Knicks would have been this past year if they had Mike Conley running the offense.
They'd probably be a playoff team.
A borderline.
They probably would.
Which is saying a lot compared to the team they were.
When you have Conley, Porzingis, and Carmelo Anthony with Afalo, and let's be honest, another good move that Phil did make out of all the bad ones, Robin Lopez is a very good player.
Very solid,
and
yes.
He helps the team now. He's rebounding.
They
well,
got him in with the
defensively.
Rings. He was drawn in last summer with the rings.
He saw the rings, and what really made him come to New York was Steve Mills.
Yeah, well,
he knew his agent.
That's
look at
true.
That.
Steve Mills, general manager.
New York Knicks.
He should win executive of the year this year. It's really just funny. It's so funny.
Let me ask you, if the Knicks have a great season, they do some magical things in the offseason, the Zen, the whole thing. Serious question. GM of the year or executive of the year, does it go to Phil or does it go to Steve Mills, who's technically the general manager? Or do they both get it? Does Steve Mills get to ride the coattails of Phil's excellent moves?
Well, and it seems like that was going to be the thing from the beginning, where if the Knicks had success, it was going to be, well, Phil did it and Steve Mills, you know, also assisted in some way and rode the, what you, like you said, rode the coattails of Phil Jackson. But, you know, the fact that the Knicks is Phil's first two seasons of being the El Presidente of the Knicks have been terrible seasons. I mean, the Knicks just are not a good team. I mean, he took a 37-win team that he took over, and they were a 17-win team the next year. So the Knicks,
he wanted to break it down, and they got his gem in Porzingis. Now you're going into year three. Build a team that can compete for playoffs.
Agreed. And they have to do it. They have to be able to draw in. I'm not saying, you know, Kevin Durant. Or, you know, I'm not saying.
Spoiler alert. That's not happening, Nick Grimes.
It's not going to happen, but I'm not even saying Kevin Durant. I'm
you
talking
good
about
players,
good
solid
NBA
pieces.
Players that you could put around Kristaps Porzingis, that you could put around Carmelo Anthony, and try to put a playoff team on the court.
Because that's the first step. If you're in the playoffs, you're contending, you're competing, guys will want to come play for you, and New York will sell itself, but not if you're a bad team. New York only sells itself if you're a good team. We're going to get to Muhammad Ali. We're going to remember the man, talk about some of his best quotes. But once again, the phone number to get involved in the program is 631-888-8811. Let's go back out to the lines. And Jackson, he's in Westchester. Jackson, what's going on?
Guys, love the show as always. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Jackson. What's on your mind?
You guys just alluded to what I was going to bring up, Kevin Durant coming to the Knicks. You're right. It's just not going to happen. Look, the one thing that they, Knicks fans who live in the world that they think Kevin Durant is coming here need to understand is this, is Kevin Durant, he wants an easy path to the finals. And whether that entails going to a team that is on the verge of a finals trip, or, you know, you take a team like the Celtics, or maybe he stays in OKC, I don't know what he's going to do. The bottom line is the Knicks are, and I'm sure you guys can agree with me when I say this, they are playoff contenders, but they're not on the verge of getting to the finals yet. I think that's what Kevin Durant wants. He's got all the money in the world. I think he just wants to win now. He just genuinely wants to get there.
Well,
he wants to hoist the trophy.
Absolutely, you know? Jackson, and that's a great point. But besides anything else, why would he leave a team that was really on the cusp of going to NBA Finals? Really
blew it
in Game 6. They had
That's
Game
it.
6 locked up, tied, and they blew it, and they couldn't finish it off. Why would he leave to come to the Knicks, who Phil Jackson hasn't proven he could be a championship executive in the league, a rookie head coach, well, not a rookie head coach, but a first-year Knicks head coach, and a roster that hasn't been filled out yet and really has so many question marks? And obviously you add Kevin Durant to the Knicks, they're going to be a really good team. But even
they
with
are.
That said, he's not leaving Oklahoma City. And if he were to leave Oklahoma City, he's not leaving to join the Knicks.
Well, and here's the thing, too. When you look at Kevin Durant, and you said it, look where he is right now. He was a game away from going to the NBA Finals.
Really, like 14 minutes away, really.
And he had three chances at it. I mean, you came as close as you could possibly go to going to the Finals. And let me ask you something. If you go to the East and you go to any team in the East, you're not better than Cleveland if LeBron James is healthy. His best path is to stay with OKC, sign with the same kind of deal that LeBron signed, a one-year or two-year deal with a player option after the first year. Give yourself some security, max-level money, and then you can opt out with your friend Russell Westbrook, and then you two can decide if you want to stay in OKC or then maybe go somewhere else in the East if LeBron's another year older, or just go to another team that you think gives you a better chance to win. You can make that decision a year from now. I just don't think Kevin Durant's leaving. I know you don't either, Jackson, and he's certainly not coming to the Knicks. No question about it.
If he were to leave, which he's not, no way it's for MSG in the Knicks. Jackson, thanks for the call.
No. And closing on this, I'd say the one place he would go, and the one place that seems to be really the one city that has a renaissance, if you will, in basketball lately is the Celtics. I mean, they've really come alive lately.
And you know what? It's certainly, and Jackson, thanks for the call, it's certainly a possibility, but even so, I think he likes where he is right now in Oklahoma City. Lou on the phone line. Lou, what's going on? Lou
going once.
Every Sunday at 9 p.m. I just want to tell you I love the show a lot.
Thanks, Lou. What's going on? What's on
Lou.
Your mind?
Yeah, so I just want to weigh on the Knicks a little. Listen, I like the Hornacek signing. I love the system he's going to bring to New York. Now, let's get seven more decent players in New York, please.
Absolutely. Let's field a team here, Lewis.
I'm looking at guards here. I like the name DJ Augustine out there as a decent signing.
You know what? It would be a decent signing.
Can they get guys without having to pay them max contracts? That's the biggest thing for the Knicks.
Lou, let me ask you this. Can Phil get players into New York, not necessarily superstar players, but formidable players that can play at this level and be part of a winning team? And I think he can. Let's see him do it.
I think we could track middle-level vets. I'm tired of seeing Jose and Sasha and two non-athletic guards on the floor.
Agreed. Enough is enough. This year, you know, Melo's aging a little bit. Porzingis is going into his second year. Let's put a team on the court. Maybe not go to the NBA Finals, but let's see a team that can make the playoffs.
Well, here's the thing with the Knicks. You're going into year three. You won 17 games in the first year under Phil Jackson. You won, what, 34 or 33 games, whatever it was, 35. They doubled their win total, or they were close to it. You look at where this Knicks team is right now. The next step is get to the playoffs. You build off the playoffs. You lose in the playoffs. And then maybe guys want to start coming to play with the Knicks. You got to make yourself a contending team with a piece or two. Then free agents are going to want to come to you. Right now, you look at this Knicks team, they're not a player away. So a guy that's a free agent like a Durant or any upper echelon type of player is not viewing New York as a win-now option. And if you look at an NBA player when they are a free agent, they're giving up money to sign elsewhere. So if they're going to give up money to sign elsewhere,
better be going to a championship
because you can get
team.
The most money from the team that you're currently on. You better be going to a team, as you were just saying, that gives you a chance to win a ring. Otherwise, why are you leaving in the first place?
And listen, we need youth here. Anthony Early is brutal. He should not be on the Knicks anymore. He's brutal. I'm tired of watching him.
Well, he doesn't even play anymore. He barely gets in the game.
Listen, he's had a couple starts where he started this season, and he's just been brutal.
The reason why he plays, their lineup was so slim this past year. I mean, and that's part of the problem, like you were alluding to, Lou. And Lou, thanks for the call, we appreciate it. But they got to get players on this team that can compete on a team that can make the playoffs, and they haven't had that the last two seasons. Put some players around Porzingis. Put some players around Carmelo Anthony. We keep harping on it because it's the Knicks' problem, and it's been the Knicks' problem the last 2 years.
Well, the problem is the Knicks fans that kill Carmelo Anthony are the worst. You look what this guy has to deal with. The 1 year he had players around him, they won 54 games, and he was third in MVP voting.
And did he lead the league in scoring that year?
I think he did lead the league in scoring. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He was tremendous, and he was great with the Knicks in that year, and he deserved every accolade he got for that season. It didn't end how it should have ended with the Knicks in the conference finals against the Heat, but they had a great regular season. And at the end of the day, Melo only has so many years left playing at an elite level. You might as well get the most out of him when you have him. And that's been the most frustrating part of looking at this Knicks team right now. But, Dan, we wanted to talk about Muhammad Ali. We only have a couple minutes left here in the program. Once again, if you want to get involved real quick, 631-888-8811 is the phone number. But we wanted to talk about some of the best quotes from Muhammad Ali. Obviously, you look at this man and the impact that he had on sports, the impact that he had on society. At one point, he was arguably the most famous person in the world. We're way too young to remember his days as a fighter. But from the standpoint of athletes and the way they talk about him,
he was just such a transcendent figure.
He transcended his sport, and he's probably one of the most popular, if not the most popular, athletes ever. So it was very sad to see his passing. He's been dealing with Parkinson's for a very long time.
Really? 30 years he's been sick with Parkinson's.
And you just look at what he was able to do for his industry and what he was able to do for the world in general, standing up for his religious beliefs and standing up for his political views and whatnot. And, of course, some of his best quotes are what makes Muhammad Ali so iconic. So we thought we'd read off some of his best quotes. Here are some of his best ones. Obviously, you start with probably his most iconic one.
Well, and the one that I think most used in today's society in general, I feel like you see it everywhere, and that's float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. I feel like that's
get better than that one.
I mean, that's such an iconic Muhammad Ali quote.
You hear it all the time.
You really do.
And you look at some of his other quotes right here. We have it right here. He who is not courageous enough to take risks will accomplish nothing in life. And his quotes aren't just about sports or not just boxing analogies. You're talking about a guy that is one of the most quotable athletes ever. And it's just to see the outpouring of love for this man and the people that met him, and everyone says that when you hear the stories, you read about them online and whatnot, very gracious with his time. It was just sad to see it go. Here's another one for you, Dan. Service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on earth.
Yeah, and you know, very sad, the passing. I know he was Friday night, he was admitted into the hospital. He was very sick, and they kind of said that he didn't have much time, and a couple hours later he passed away, 74 years old.
And you saw the news networks. They had all these packages ready to go. They had a feeling this was coming.
Oh, they knew that, and it seemed like that Like a lot of the networks got, kind of a word earlier in the day that this was probably going to happen. He was very sick, battling, you know, symptoms from Parkinson's disease. And it's a disease he's been battling, you know, for the better part of 30 years. So, you know, very sad loss for not only the boxing world, obviously, but really the news world, the sports world, and the entertainment world. Muhammad Ali was that transcendent of a figure, and definitely a sad loss.
And we were just out in Los Angeles for the semester through Ithaca College. If you know about us a little bit, we were out there studying, interning, doing all that good stuff. When we were out there, we were obviously on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And did you know, Dan, that Muhammad Ali's Hollywood Walk of Fame star is the only one that's not in ground? It's not on the ground. It's hung up right near the entrance to the Hall of Fame Museum. Hung up. And the reason for that is, I read before on an ESPN article, is because he didn't want anyone that did not like Muhammad Ali, he did not want them to be able to disrespect him by stepping on him or by graffitiing his stars or by vandalizing, doing whatever you can.
That's
to
very,
the stars
I didn't know
on the
that.
Ground.
I knew it was hung up, but I didn't know that was the reason
and
why.
He's the only one out of the 2,500 stars that are there. He said, because he didn't want anyone that did not like him to disrespect him and his family with that star being there. And the Hollywood Walk of Fame, they honored that, they respected that, and they gave him his own star that's hung up, so it's not on the ground like every other star.
I knew that.
I did
not know that was a story, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, right.
And really, honestly, in the last couple of days, a lot of people did not like Muhammad Ali. A lot of people had a lot of issues with certain beliefs of his, but I think the one thing that people do recognize is that he was such a transcendent figure, and he will definitely be missed, and obviously the greatest boxer of all time.
No question, and arguably one of the best, most outspoken athletes of all time. Here's just a great quote from him again. "I am the greatest. I said that even before I knew I was." I mean, we're talking about a guy that said these things in the 1960s, the 1970s. At the time, no one ever talked like
imagine
this.
Imagine if social media was around.
I mean, that's the thing. If social media was around, how many followers would Muhammad Ali have?
Oh, my God. He'd be tweeting every day, quotes.
He'd have over a billion followers. And you look at the guys that fight now, like Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. They talk a lot. They have lots to say. But, I mean, the original guy that said all this stuff, that had this brash, that had that cockiness and that confidence, it was Muhammad Ali. And you look at some of his greatest quotes. This was one of my favorites right here, too. "It's just a job. Grass grows, birds fly, waves pound the sand. I beat people up."
That's great.
You're talking about just a legend.
Definitely going to miss Muhammad Ali. A few minutes left in the show. Definitely wanted to touch on this over the weekend. A fan throws a beer at Citizens Bank Park at Ryan Howard. And this is the problem. And this is – I don't know if it's –
Let's see if you take the take here that I think you're going to as a Met fan.
I don't know what it is. I just know the fact that Ryan Howard is one of the greatest Philadelphia Phillies of all time, part of two National League championship teams, a World Series team.
This would be like the Mets doing that. Met fans doing that to David Wright.
It's hard to imagine. And
it's a similar situation. Contract, I mean, hurt, not hitting.
And I understand Ryan Howard, 36 years old. He's only hitting .151, $25 million. In the final season.
Which is one of the – I know we don't have a lot of time, but that's one of the worst contracts ever.
It is, but come on. Ryan Howard is one of the all-time great Phillies. They're going to retire his number.
He won a ring there.
Two National League championship teams, a cornerstone of the franchise for about 10 years. And I am shocked that a Philadelphia Phillies fan would throw a beer on him.
Well, this is what Philly is known for, and I don't want to alienate an entire fan
base. They're not great fans.
Well, I mean, these things happen, and it's obviously unfortunate that this was the circumstance that Ryan Howard had to go through this. He shouldn't have. But, I mean, that's baseball, Susan. I mean, it's unfortunate.
No, seriously. He deserves more respect than
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And the fans should be reprimanded. They should look into it. But that just about does it for us. Dan, this was a lot of fun. Thank you to Robert Cobal for the opportunity to host this show. The show will be podcasted, so if you missed any of it, follow us on Twitter at Jake Asman and at Dan Budick and get it all on there. And listen, we appreciate all the great feedback. We appreciate all
the
callers.
We got a bunch of calls.
Yeah, thanks for all the calls tonight, everyone. And we'll be back soon. Stick with us on Twitter, and we'll keep you updated. So long, everybody.
Have a good night.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.